Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the SOM TV podcast. My name is Jason Wise. On today's podcast, we have a very special conversation. We are going to be speaking with Adrian Rodriguez of Joss Wines, a French winemaker living in the United States who makes wines in the ancient country of Georgia. Georgia is one of the most fascinating places that has an argument to be the originator of all the grapes we use to make wine. So in this conversation, we're going to talk about that incredible history and the culture of winemaking in Georgia. Before we do that, I want to talk to you all and say Cup of Salvation, the newest SOM film, has released in Los Angeles, and the response has been staggering. This is the biggest, most important film we've ever made. I cannot believe the audience reactions. We've been extended another week in Los Angeles, so make sure you get tickets for that. There are Q&As with the director, myself, and the cast tonight and tomorrow and all next week. It will be playing in Los Angeles. Go to somfilms.com to get tickets. We're opening in Chicago at the Music Box Theater the 14th and 15th. Do not sleep on those. Tickets are going fast. And then Napa the 20th, 21st, and 22nd at the Cameo Cinema. And then Atlanta November 1st. Somfilms.com has a full list of screenings, and we're adding more every day. Most tickets come with a glass of wine for any of these screenings. Many have also been asking how to get the wines in our upcoming SOM film, Cup of Salvation. You can get those at storicawines.com, S-T-O-R-I-C-A, storicawines.com. There is a wine in this film that none of you will believe, and you can sign up to pre-order that wine and get all of these incredibly delicious Armenian wines that are featured in the movie at storicawines.com. Without further ado, Adrian Rodriguez of Joss Wines and Claire Copey talking about Georgia.
Hi, everyone. I'm Claire Copey, and I am joined today by one of my dearest friends. Very excited to talk with him. His name is Adrian Rodriguez, and he's a sommelier wine professional here in Los Angeles, and he recently started making wine. I don't know why you're doing that to yourself, but thanks for talking to us about it. How are you doing, Adrian?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Can't complain, you know?
Yeah, very excited to talk to you about all the wines we've been making. I mean, there's just so much interesting thing we've been doing the last couple of years.
Yeah, I can't wait to get talking about that because you're doing some crazy stuff. But first, I'd like to get a little into your background here. So as far as wine goes, how did the wine bug first bite you? And then how did it get you to Los Angeles and your career here?
Wow. That goes back to my family. I was born in Perpignan. I grew up in Toulouse. So if you drive from one town to another, most of what you're going to see is vines. I mean, it's not that special to be working in the wine business back home.
Jeez. You know,
it's a big part of the French economy. So I actually went to wine school right after high school. I was 19 when I joined in. It takes enology and viticulture takes a scientific background, which I was a scientific major. So it takes a lot of chemistry and biology, like when you're going to get into it, really, you know, pH, acids, like sugar transformation, bacteria, all of that. That's a fair amount of chemistry, biochemistry, and biology. So when I started studying it, it was like very about the science and, you know, like how wine goes, you know, it's like science with a little bit of magic and a little bit of soul and a little bit of passion and some booze on top of that. So I became, you know, very passionate and really quick with it. All the other elements beside the, you know, the hard cold facts about chemistry, it became something natural to like both sides of it, the scientific part of it and that kind of like soul magic feeling, that artistic part of it, really.
Absolutely.
So that was, I started with wine school, you know, so like you're right into it. I worked in Languedoc, I worked in Fronton near Toulouse, I worked in Bordeaux. Then I went to London after that, just, you know, to explore a big city, because I'm from a very 800 people village in south of France, a very small village.
Oh, really? It's that small? Damn, I didn't know that.
Super small. Yeah, where I grew up, Le Foga, it's near Toulouse, is super small. There's a lot of small villages that's not uncommon back home. And then I worked as a sommelier. I found a job for Alain Ducasse, a pretty big chef, fantastic sellers. I worked for him. Then I worked as a wine director for a TV chef named Bryn Williams. After that, I moved to Canada and worked writing articles and doing videos and social media for the Société des Alcools du Québec, which is responsible of selling all the booze in Quebec, basically. After that, I worked for a négociant back in France for international sales, for the website, for buying for a high-end, you know, Burgundy and Bordeaux négociant. And after that, I found a job in Los Angeles. I wanted to come to the U.S. You know, I think it's a very exciting market we have here in California, being a producer, having all the wines in the world, all kinds of restaurants, all kinds of foods, all kinds of pairings. Like, there's no much as eclectic as Los Angeles you can find for wine and food.
I agree with that, yeah. The way I met you is that you were selling me wine at restaurants. Well, I guess we met more like drinking at bars and stuff like that. But then we really started working together. I was buying wine from you for restaurants. So that's a whole other side of the industry as well.
It is a whole other side. And when you realize, I realized something, you know, I realized this when I was much, much younger already. I was like, oh, the people that are selling the wine have more control over it maybe and making more money actually than the people selling it. You know, when you know all the little, you know, quirks that make into the price of a bottle of wine. A lot of it comes from, you know, the people that are selling a wine well is harder sometimes and often to make it well.
That's why I haven't gotten into that, because it would drive me insane and I'd lose my mind. So then you decided to create your own label of wine, which is Just Wines. J-O-S for anybody.
Yeah, Just. Yeah, it could be Just Wine, but Just Wines, yeah. My business partners are Georgian, Georgian Thomas Gomiashvili. And we were, you know, drinking.
How did you meet business partners in Georgia?
They have a restaurant here in LA called Le Grand Restaurant, downtown LA. So that's how I met them. I met them like I met you, you know, selling them wine, basically. Selling them wine and then drinking wine and discussing about, you know, the wines that are in Georgia, all the very particular style of wine that they have in Georgia. Many sums, even however, you know, knowledgeable they can be, don't know much about the grapes, the regions, and the style of wine. People know Cuvée. It's the, you know, the clay pot that in which they make the wines, you know, that are generally buried. People know one or two grapes, like Cazzitelli, which is the main one, but there are really a lot of unknown mondes knowledge about this country.
Yeah, I don't think I really had any until I started learning from you.
Yeah, I mean, me neither. Yeah. Until I met them, I knew a couple of facts, like it's the birthplace of wine, but really, besides that, there's a lot that people don't know. And, you know, and I want to explore and realize, oh, there's a bunch of grapes and a bunch of different terroirs, different climates, vastly different climates, even you think it's a small country, because of the mountains, the influence of the Black Sea. So it's like can be really, really cold in some parts and really, really warm in some others. So you have a spectrum of energy, you know, in the grapes that is pretty, pretty wide. And I felt that there was a very classic winemaking way of making the wine there, which is long macerations. And I personally believe that with long macerations, you know, you kind of like taking away the terroir and grape identity a little bit toward, you know, for the winemaking technique that takes over in terms of aromatic spectrum.
And why is that? Why do long macerations take away the terroir, do you think?
It's like, I'll make an analogy of that. It's like if you're making like a braised piece of meat, in the end, you know, it's going to have that braised kind of filling. And it doesn't mean that it's not great. I love meat, you know, some braised short rib. But, you know, you can make a steak that you can make medium rare. You can make tartare. You can make this. You can make that. There are so many other things you can make with the same ingredients. And I believe then you can show a different face, a different identity for those grapes and those terroirs. And that's what we've been trying to do.
So you met these guys who became your business partners for the wines. But how did you... I can understand the, like, curiosity and wanting to make wine. We all know how hard it is, though. So then... You decided to take it an extra level, and instead of like, oh, you know, Santa Barbara's in our backyard or like Paso or whatever, you're like, I'm going to go to the other side of the freaking world to make wines in Georgia. How did you, like, why did you do that to yourself?
Yeah, when I backtrack, I'm like, how did he end up being so fast like this? Because my first trip to Georgia, I just went there to see what's what. My friend George tells me, oh, I have this guy that can help you. He's a friend of ours. He'll pick you up at the airport. He'll bring you to vineyard so you can see it for yourself. Because I kept sending a list of questions like feet per acre and like yields per acre and orientation and the space between the feet and blah, 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 pruning systems. And he's like, dude, well, you got to go there. Nobody can answer those questions through email. Go there and see it for yourself. And me going to check it, it's ended up me making a contract with grape growers in a winery to, you know, make a couple of wines right away. So that week ended up being very productive. It's me visiting vineyard, me visiting grapes, and I thought I was just checking some things, and actually it turns out I was buying grapes already. I was like, oh, the guy, it's like, oh, we bought 4 tons of grapes.
You impulse bought grapes to make wine?
Impulse, like it's an impulse purchase, like by the counter. And I was back in the plane. I was like, dude, we're already, like that really chipped that really fast. That how it was very easy to find grapes, because you have to understand in Georgia, there's a lot of people growing grapes and there's a lot of big factories that are buying those grapes. So buying a few, those factories are making 20 million bottles. So you can take a couple of tons, you know, off of, like they're all mine.
I can't imagine that those are very high quality wines that they're making.
No, they're not making fantastic wine, but what I'm saying is that you can easily get, oh, this guy will buy 10 tons of grapes like this. Like you don't even... That's not my, and there's a few, you know, producers that are making their own wine. They have their own vines. They have their own winery. But there's a lot of people buying grapes and a lot of people just making grapes, actually. A lot of vineyards, you know, in Georgia. So meeting and finding one actually wasn't that hard. Finding the right quality that you want, that can be a lot harder. But the opportunity of making wine presented itself pretty quickly. As soon as I found people we were meeting with winery, as soon as I found people that can be, oh, yeah, I know what you mean. Like, this is, I understand your way of making wine. I understand what you want to do with that. And I agree that I'm going to be helping you doing that. That was, I already stepped in it. Like, we were already in it. We were already talking about winemaking process, sulfites leveled, you know, call it, name it. So we were already in it. So honestly, my exploration trip came back and was like, all right, guys, we're making these two wines.
Your exploration trip turned into,
you're
already making wine.
Yeah, it turned out to be 4 wines. And then the following year, I went there a bunch of times to find more grape growers, qualities that were requiring different grapes. And by the second year, we were making 60,000 bottles.
Which is absolutely insane. Like, people need to know, like, that's a lot. He's on his, this is your this will be your third vintage this year in 2022. Yeah. No, you're going to skip 2023, actually.
We're going to skip
that
one.
Because it's a crap year. You decided to make orange wines, natural wines, is like the base of the Joss Wines lineup. Mm-hmm. And so what was that decision process to make natural orange wines?
I'm going to start with the natural part. The natural part was basically we're looking for organic grapes. I don't need to add anything in the wines besides a little bit of sulfites for conservation. So they call natural wine, you know, there's really not like a certification for natural wine. Some people call natural wine stuff they made with industrially made grape with a ton of sulfites. It's a bit everything and nothing sometimes. But my personal opinion, my personal vision of that is I'm not adding any additives because I want the wine to be as pure as possible, because I want the expression of the grape to speak. I want it to be like, very shiny, very jumping off the glass, very expressive, very explosive. And that's what I'm gravitating towards. I don't like wines that are too faulted. I'm not looking for something mousy or overly oxidized. I'm just very careful with the wine. I put minimal sulfite and I'm very careful because I just want it I want a grape, to speak through the glass.
Oh,
basically.
Yeah. And your wines are clean. I have to say that. We did a conversation about natural wines with a gentleman who owns a wine investment company, Anthony Zhang. And we were talking about how so many of these natural wines and a lot of orange wines too are just super flawed because maybe these winemakers aren't, being technical or careful or clean enough. And I have to say, like, tasting through your wines, they're all so clean. Like, if you guys are looking for a really good example of a sound, in balance, clean, natural orange wine that still has all like the fun, fresh, funky, but it's not flawed funky. They're like really good, I have to say.
Thank you. Thank you, Clara. Yeah, well, being careful. Yeah, you're right. It's just being careful. Like, it's like cooking. It's like being in a cellar is all about cleaning, It's about, your cellar should be always like you're cleaning it like a sushi kitchen, It needs to be super clean so everything tastes just fresh, just the way it's supposed to. And everything that's in your wine is something you did to it. It's something that you did on purpose. It's not something that just happened on its own.
Well, hopefully, right?
hopefully. There's always a little bit of surprise. Oh, this goes that way. But even, like I will say, my funkiest wine, there's a tiny bit of VA on it. Everything that needs to be integrated inside the wine's profile and not something that dominates and creates the wine's profile. It's not a flaw that creates the wine profile. A little bit of VA here, you know, tiny bit of like bread here and there. And then you get... It's part of the spectrum. It's part of the personality and the complexity of the wine. And that's when it becomes interesting.
And going back to the natural, you know, sustainable aspect and the orange style as well, that's something that you had mentioned to me. This isn't a response to these wines becoming popular. This is also because this is a very traditional ancient style of winemaking in Georgia, correct?
It is. It is. It's. They've always been using skin contact on the whites. You know, they call them actually amber whites. They don't call them like white or orange. When you get a bottle of white in Georgia, you ask if it's amber or not. It means it's going to be. They call it European style when you make an actual white direct press, and otherwise it's called an amber wine. So the spectrum you can get, it's pretty wide. It can go from like one, generally from 3 to 6 months on the skins. Sometime with the whole clusters too. 6 months in the tank on the contact. So much so that your pomace in a cuvée actually goes to the bottom. Do you know how when you're making wine, the pomace stays on top? After 6 months, it plunges down. It's actually like saturated in liquid.
Really?
And it plunges down. And that's how they know. That's how they pull the... The, you know,
and
the
that's
juice
just naturally
out of the
without any like punching down or anything like that. It just happens naturally.
They do a couple punch down at the beginning, but this happens more towards the end. Where your palm is plunged down, then it's easier for them, you know, to take the juice off the top. Because you remember the cuvées are in the ground. So you need to like, you know, they're like vases
That
are like in the ground. So you just have an opening like this. And then you have like a big.
And that's something that's pretty unique to Georgia, right? To have these like in the ground.
Very unique to Georgia. It's been used, like Grafner used those. Many people now have turned like to this technology because people like the contact with clay, especially on like tannic orange wines like this, that will kind of like soften a little bit the texture. Also, people used to use them because the ground is cooler and that naturally controls the temperature of fermentation. So that's how they did that. The problem is now you're harvesting in a much warmer climate than you did before because you're harvesting before. So if it's 105 degrees outside, the ground is cold, but it's not. It's a little bit cooler, but that doesn't make us of a difference now as it did when they harvested in October, you know, like thousands of years ago.
So 2021 was your very first vintage and you said you had 4 bottlings that first year, 4 different wines?
We ended up making a blend, so I wanted to make 2 wines. We found another grape, a very interesting grape called Pink Castelli, which is the gray Castelli, Castelli Gris, really, which is very unfamous in the sense that it's co-planted. There's just a few acres on the planet. And I wanted to use it for a blend, but I liked it so much. I kept a little bit to bottle like 800 bottles by itself because it's very, very unique. I've seen one, maybe 2 producers ever that have 100% of that grape. I still have a bottle at home. We'll have it. We're all
going to say you didn't bring
it
yesterday when we tasted your wine.
We're out of stock. I kept a couple bottles. And the 22 vintage was so hot that on that pink grape, I got something more like a red wine. So I had to change the name. It's kind of a pink orange wine. And now it's the thing with pink grape
red.
Is you can make any, of wine. So now my orange wine from last year is a red wine, this current vintage.
That's winemaking, right? Like you got to just kind of roll with the punches.
Exactly.
So then 2022 comes around and you do have this hotter vintage and you expanded wildly. How many bottlings do you have now? Are you working with?
We have 12 different cuvées. That's what we created last year.
This guy's second vintage and he's got 12 different bottles. Like, Jesus.
we went a little bit overboard maybe sometime or so, but also... Also,
but
it
you're
was
playing, you're experimenting.
Too, yeah, voila. There's a lot of those that are very small release and very small cuvée. There's really one wine that I make a ton of and a couple more that have like, you know, 8,000 bottles. And then it's all like, you know, 100Ks, 80Ks, 150Ks. Some super small releases because I mean, it was a weird environment to discover those grapes because it was a very, very hot vintage. But it gave me the opportunity to explain like what those grapes are going to be when they're in full ripeness and everything, what is the extent of ripeness that they can offer, and I will translate into the wine. So I got to play, you tried yesterday some grapes by himself with different winemaking technique, like Kissy. I like to play with that grape. Some blends, how do they interact with one another? And those are really things that I needed to do for myself because there's not so much people working in that way in Georgia. Therefore, I couldn't just buy a couple of bottles of this guy or that guy or this person or this girl and try them and be like, oh, that's how she does it or that's how he does it. No, it's just I needed to find out for myself what will be a medium to full light to full-bodied spectrum of orange wine in Cajeti, Georgia, with those grapes. What is the spectrum? And now we found that, we know.
So with these, you're mentioning a lot of indigenous grapes, a lot of which I don't know, and I'm going to have to do some more research on. But all of your wines are made from these ancestral Georgian grapes. Is that the vast majority of wines coming out of Georgia? Or are you seeing a lot of like Cabernet Sauvignon and Chardonnay planted there, you know?
No, that's a very vast majority of what's in Georgia. There is a couple of big producer like those super factories, as I was mentioning, that have also some vineyards. So they have, I've heard of a little bit of Chardonnay, I've heard of a little bit of Riesling, I've heard of someone that does Sauvignon Blanc, but we're talking Syrah. I've seen Syrah in the hotter parts of Georgia because, you know, they love, it's going to make a lovely, like big, ripe, like juicy red wine. The one I've seen the most weirdly is Montepulciano. I don't know how that happened. I've seen it in rosés. I've seen it in reds. Do you know? They have some Muscat varietals also, like everyone else. You know, like every country in the world has a couple of different Muscat breed there. But besides that, no. It's, I would say 99.9% of the plantings are indigenous Georgian grapes that can only be found in Georgia, except a couple of people planting it in Armenia or Bulgaria. But 99% of the Georgian grapes in Georgia and 99% of the grapes in Georgia are Georgian.
That's awesome. I love that they're fully just embracing their wine identity and rolling with it instead of kind of, you know, playing to the more international market. But does that make it so not only are you making these wines by yourself, you're doing everything, like you're marketing it and everything, which has to be said, like what a huge job that is, because it's one thing to make a really excellent wine, but if nobody's, if it's not getting into glasses, what's the point? So have you found, I think marketing it in general would just be difficult, but have you found because they're Georgian wines, because they're made with these grapes that a lot of people can't pronounce from a region they might not be able to pronounce, are you finding that difficult?
I will say that this is a double sided coin really, because they are unknown. My potential of transforming or creating the brand around it, it's like a lot of freedom, you know, because there's no perception for those grapes yet. So I get to create it. So that gives me a lot of freedom in that sense. I like to look at that that way. And I will say that orange wine is something that people don't really care about the grape, really. It's more about, you know, the look, the way that the wine looks is very important, especially now. I'm using clear bottles. You've seen, you know, the rainbow of colors that my wine creates. Fun labels. My baby brother did the labels for me, Gautier. I'm very lucky. I use one of my labels as my friend Gabriel Mouzet, who's a painter. I bought one of his paintings and used it for the label. My girlfriend made one for me. And we have one of our designers in Georgia that did one. But so my brother did a bunch of them really fast too. You know, I don't know how to say it. Like, it's just, we're just creating kind of the market with it. So sometimes it's a fantastic opportunity to be like, yeah, I got room for your wines because there's no one in that category. But the other side of it is like, nobody's looking for Georgian wine. Some people don't even want to try them. They have that idea of like very severe, austere, tannic, oxidized, you know, like very long maceration of Georgian wines. And some people are working with a couple of producers and that's the only thing they want to hear about. So I would say it's a little bit like everything. When you bring something new to the market, you know, you're going to have to work. You're going to have to entice people to try it. You're going to have to knock on some doors and not give up.
I haven't seen a ton of Georgian wines like in the supermarket or anything like that. And you're talking about like all of these millions of bottles that a lot of these bigger producers are making. Why is it that, I mean, are they getting exported to the US or?
I mean, this has been, you know, Georgia has been part of the Soviet Union until 1990, still having, you know, difficulties breaking the ties with, you know, the immensely powerful Russian influence there. Especially now with the war in Ukraine, Georgia has two regions that have been that are occupied by the Russian army as well. People don't talk about it,
including
as much.
The region that you're working in.
It's not the region I'm working, but I'm getting one of. No, thank God. Oh my God. No, not in Kakheti, which that will be really sad because that's one of the core region of the history of Georgia is embedded into the region of Kakheti. It's like the Bordeaux of Georgia. You know, it's like the biggest wine production. Historically, wine was probably created in that particular region 8,000 years ago. This is what I found, the oldest residue of winemaking in Kakheti.
Where in the country is Kakheti?
That is on the eastern side. So that you're going to have Russia on the east and Azerbaijan on the south of the region of Kakheti. So that's really at the eastern, that's a really, really warm part of Georgia because it's between two chain of mountain. It's a valley called the Alazani Valley, which is the river. The Alazani River creates that valley. And when you look at the map, it's like it makes like a little, you know, slide like this between the mountain. And that's, you know, very nice and flat valley. So you can grow all kinds of things, very agricultural. And it's very hot. So it bakes, like it makes the grapes like really ripe. Because when you go to the mountain, the temperature cools down really, really fast. It goes, voila. So that's where we're based there in Georgia.
Are the wine regions designated like they are in countries that, you know, wine drinkers are a little more familiar with? France, is there an appellation system in place in Georgia as of yet?
Well, there kind of is. I'm not dealing with it much. There is. You can put the name of the region, but I don't think there's a lot of like rules that are being controlled, you know, by an entity. I know there's some micro zones, like there is one called Mukuzani, for example, which is not too far from where I am. Some micro zones, this is civilly controlled to have to be able to put Mukuzani on your bottle. But I've said my wines are from Kakheti on the bottle. It's not that controlled in terms of like yields, in terms of all the rules I can compare to a French appellation from my personal background. So I will say it's pretty easy on that side. That being said, I'm having trouble with there's an entity that certifies the wine in Georgia for export. And it's very, very dark for me to understand how they work because they will approve some wines and I'm like, well, and they'll refuse some wine for absolutely no reason. But it's not too much of an issue for me personally. It's just, you know, a little something more, a little drum, something you have to drum, you know, over a little bit.
That's why it helps to have 12 different bottlings because, you know, you're going to get most of them approved. So
yeah, exactly. Exactly.
One.
Yeah. If there's an issue with one, I'll blend with something else and we'll figure it out.
How has it been just transitioning? I mean, you're still working in restaurants a little bit and selling wine to restaurants, but what's been the best part of transitioning to winemaking for you?
The real fun part. I mean, besides, you know, winemaking itself, which is like, if you like cooking and you like winemaking, you know, it's like, you wake up in the middle of the night having an idea for a blend or having an idea for something or a name of a wine or just a new technique I'm thinking of. For example, we tried yesterday one a white that is 90% juice, 10% skin. So that's kind of finding all those little levels between the one being creative is one of a very exciting part of it. And honestly, talking about it, doing wine dinners, having people enjoying something you've created, enjoying with food in, you know, restaurant that you love, this is very rewarding, I will say. Having people that I didn't think will go for Georgian wine or didn't think will go for natural wine of all kinds of age, of all kinds, you know, of wine drinking habits coming towards my wine, that's, you know, really enchanting to see something like that.
And then on the other side of that coin, what's been the biggest challenge? Maybe something that surprised you that you weren't expecting.
You know, administration and logistics, it's always a lot more than you think it will be. Whatever you do in this world, the laws with alcohol in this country are very, very, very complicated. because there's 50 states. There's like shipping samples to New York has been enormously difficult. Seems like it would be something easy to. It's harder to make to ship samples to New York than to go to Georgia and make wine. So this is the what they call compliance. Laws, like all the paperwork, all of that, that's been a big roadblock in so many ways. That is why also we skip that vintage, because just getting the wine there, all the little things that you don't think when you think, I'm going to build this company, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. The hard part is making the wine, is selling the wine, convincing people to drink Georgian wines. But in the end, you realize that administration, cash flow, all that, those little details that make it really happen, that this has been the most frustrating part of it.
But you've done such a great job just hustling and marketing your wine and getting it into restaurants and not just in California. Like I expected, you know, it'd be mostly Southern California, but where are your wines at right now?
We're working already in Oregon, and we have shipped a couple pallets already there. In a few bunch of restaurants there, people can see while the wines are being sold around the country on our website, Just Wines. But yeah, I have Oregon. I just came back from New York. I did a big event there, so we're hoping, you know, to soon have representation there. I have some friends in Canada. Probably for next year, we're going to ship some cases there directly from Georgia. So far that's it. We have a couple states here. We're hoping to have four or five by the beginning of next year. And, and growing, slowly growing. A lot of demand. I've been surprised of people asking of samples in all kinds of states, like Rhode Island and stuff like things you wouldn't
really
expect. Asking. Yeah.
That's so cool. I mean, it's not surprising to me because the wines, again, they are clean, they are sound, they're beautiful, they're nuanced. Like, especially, I love those bottles behind me. They're a lot of fun, and they're very food friendly too. Your wines are very food friendly. So it makes sense to me that a lot of restaurants are picking it up.
I was thinking, yeah, food friendly. It's because something I didn't mention, the food in Georgia, that's a big part of the culture, is the hospitality, the food. You go to a meeting to see a grape grower and you think you're going to go see the vineyard and talk about the grape, but you go to his house, you start pulling out food. They put vine wood on the floor, like in outside, and just build a fire, put some meat on it, call mitzvare. It's like skewers that they serve with sour plum sauce. That happens every time you go somewhere. You shake a hand. By the time you turn around, somebody is cooking something. They're bringing that farm cheese called sulguni, bread. They bring carafes. Because the wine doesn't come in bottle. They have the quaver in the back of the garage and they just like, whoop, fill it up. They bring like
that's
small
awesome.
Like rock glasses and just like everybody drinks shots of wines. So that's, and you're eating like right away. So the food in Georgia, they have incredibly good produce. The meat is really good. Tomatoes are incredible. Vegetables in general. Yeah, the bread is really good. So sorry, I just was just jumping on that yet. Yes. Because some tannic wines like this, they go really well with food because the tannins can get all the fat, all the energy, all the richness of the sauce, and just you just left with those beautiful, very deep aromatics. So I'm not surprised that they work well in restaurant because those wines in general, whether they're very extracted on the lighter side like mine, they're wine that work really well with food. And the tapestry of food profiles we have in Los Angeles, going, you know, from like Asian, Thai, a lot of Mexican, a lot of South American, Central American cuisine, a lot of sweets and sour, a lot of sweet and spicy kind of foods. And that's why orange wine works so well with it, is because I think that people love spicy, they love wine pairings, and orange wine has that energy that you can find in a red with the freshness you can find in a white, which works with so many food profiles we have here in Southern California.
Oh yeah, and your lineup is just this huge range. So there are some that do drink really nicely on their own. I think honestly they all drink nicely on their own, but yeah, some of them are like with food, lovely. I'm just so amazingly proud of everything you've done and to just see this growing. It's very well deserved. Everybody, keep your eyes peeled for Just Wines and Georgia wines in general too. But these wines in particular are pretty awesome, pretty incredible. I think you're going to love them. So go to justwines.com to see where in the world Adrian is selling them right now, where you can find them, where you can buy them and drink them. And then where can we find Just Wines on social media so we can follow you?
Instagram. On Instagram, we have it. We have Just Wines on Instagram. You're going to see the logo is a double J orange. So you cannot really miss it. There's a bunch of videos of me when I was in Georgia, pictures of the grapes, a video of me making the wine, going there to check the wine several times a year. You can see me in the cold and me in the heat. There's a lot of fun stuff and more stuff and events coming up.
And I meant to ask, what does Joss mean?
Oh, Joss, actually, when Georgian cheers, they say Gaumar Joss, which means Gaumar Joss, which means victory to you. But that's outside, they say cheers and say Joss, and you just drink the wine. So that's kind of like cheers.
Well, that's perfect. Means.
Awesome. There you go, yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing your beautiful wines with us, Adrian. And
thank you for having me.
Yeah, everybody look for Joss Wines and hey, Joss.
Hey, Joss, thank you. Thank you so much.
I want to thank everybody for listening. It really means a lot. If you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a great rating wherever you listen to your podcasts. Thank you, Claire Copey, and thank you, Adrian Rodriguez, for the insightful conversation on Georgian wines. Do not forget, go to somfilms.com to get tickets for Cup of Salvation, coming in Chicago next weekend, Napa the following weekend, and playing all week in Los Angeles at the Lemley Glendale. More screenings are being added all the time at somfilms.com. Thank you to John Adams for producing this episode. And if you want to get the wines in the film, in Cup of Salvation, go to storicawines.com, S-T-O-R-I-C-A, storicawines.com. Everybody be safe and drink a glass of very ancient wine for me. We'll talk soon.